Hello, I'm Steve Fast. How do we look at history? We form our view of history through dusty old books or scratchy old recordings.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Or classroom lessons or lectures.
And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity.
Some of us learn history through the words and stories of those older than us, our parents, our grandparents.
At times, history and fate meet at a single time, in a single place. So it was at Lexington and Concord. So it was a century ago at Appomattox. So it was last week in Selma, Alabama.
But when does history stop being something we learn about and start being something we experience in our own lives?
And singing the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
When does history become the thing that you tell your children or grandchildren? The answer is anytime we stop and take an accounting of it.
In the words of Dr. King, we are all tied together in a single garment of destiny.
Because although we don't often take the time to realize it, history is in our eyes.
He was so together, so well-spoken, so intelligent, but also so personable. Well, blown away is what we keep saying, but it was really something.
But I wish I had known what I know today. I would not only have had a tape recorder, but probably a video camera and roses and food downstairs.
It was 6 degrees. There were 18,000 people out standing around the old state capitol of Springfield, and I was one of them.
None of us in that room had any idea, and perhaps the president-elect at that point had no idea that at one point in the not-too-distant future would become the president of the United States.
The first time I met him was long before the presidential election began, and I feel like everybody knew.
Before he had announced, I just happened to have a meeting with him in his office, and I said, well, I don't have any doubt about your ability to be competitive because you won Iroquois County. And he sort of looked at me like, why does that matter?
And I had an opportunity to meet with him then. He had smoked a cigarette in my office.
And there I was interviewing a future president wearing a tank top and shorts.
So I said to one of my colleagues, I said, this Barack Obama, I wish I knew how to spell his name, but he's going to have a bright future.
I was trying to figure out, if he was a Democrat or Republican.
Barack Obama carried McLean County. I found that very interesting.
It's definitely something that you go home feeling like you are a part of something bigger than yourself.
WJBC presents History Through Our Eyes, the election of Barack Obama.
In a mere 10 years, Barack Obama went from a first-term Illinois state senator to the president-elect of the United States. It was a rapid rise that surprised many national pundits and observers of politics. From the outset of Obama's first term in the Illinois State Senate, he began to make an impression. Bloomington Normal NAACP President Mike Williams.
My first recollection of Barack Obama was in Decatur, Illinois, late 90s, early 2000. And he was a keynote speaker at the NAACP State Convention. Some of my colleagues that came up to me and they said, oh, Barack Obama's going to be our keynote speaker. And I said, well, who is this Barack Obama? I've never heard of him. So they said, you got to listen to him. He's a dynamic speaker and he has a really good message. So fast forward, I was sitting in the banquet after eating my dry chicken. And I said, okay, here comes this dry speaker. But he captivated me. He really resonated with me. He talked about the working class. He talked about national health care. He talked about families and basically really trying to turn things around. And it really resonated with me. He didn't seem like a career politician. So I said to one of my colleagues, this Barack Obama, I wish I knew how to spell his name, but he's going to have a bright future.
And it was an initiative on education that first brought the freshman Illinois state legislator to the WJBC airwaves. As recalled by then WJBC talk show host Dan Irvin and his then intern, Sandeep Malangi.
I had to call up Dan because 10 years ago, back in 1997.
Which was actually the last time we had spoken.
And I said to him, do you remember that time when I worked for you? At WJBC, we interviewed a guy by the name of Senator at the time, and State Senator Obama, and we talked and reminisced about the time we actually interviewed him way before anyone knew him. and had a great interview. We both thought that.
But I walked out of the studio and I said, I think it's possible we just interviewed the first black president of the United States.
He was a
freshman
Illinois State
freshman
senator.
State senator. But he was so, and I was so happy that Sandeep called me because he, I know, had the same impression. We were just so blown away by the guy. So blown away, in fact, that we recorded over the tape, and so the conversation is lost forever.
To be honest with you, I don't remember this, if he talked about it before we had the interview or after or during, that he had written a book called Dreams of My Father. And I was so blown away by this interview that I actually went literally right after the day's events to the Barnes & Noble on Veterans Parkway and tried to get Dreams of My Father. Of course, at the time, you know, it was not in stock, and so they have to be special ordered.
How do you spell that again? Alabama?
That's right. And I ordered the book, and I got it, you know, whatever, it was a week later or so forth. So that's how blown away I was by that interview.
The book that had to be back-ordered in 1997 would later go on to become an international bestseller, and Obama used it as a tool to introduce himself to the nation. He would later tell Jim Williams and Beth Wisman why he wrote the book.
The book that I wrote, it's called Dreams for My Father, and I wrote it in 1996, shortly after I got out of law school, and what really was a reflection on my family. You know, I come from a mixed-race family. My father's from Kenya, my mom's from Kansas, and I thought, looking at my family and how I tried to deal with these issues of race would be a useful exercise, not only for me, but also maybe give people, you know, some food for thought in thinking about the racial issues here in this country and all across the world. But in this campaign, you know, I think one of the things I'm most proud about the voters of Illinois with is let's face it, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't have the usual background of an Illinois politician. You know, I there aren't too many Illinois politicians who were born in Hawaii or have a name like Barack Obama. You know, as the primary showed, the voters of Illinois, you know, weren't closed-minded, and race was not an issue.
In the initial WJBC interview, Obama's personality seemed to supersede party lines. Dan Irvin and Sandeep Malangi.
He was so together, so well-spoken, so intelligent, but also so personable. I was a little bit quirky, probably, with some of the questions would ask, maybe for a personal opinion or a favorite poem or you know, something. And he was willing to, you know, step back for a second and just relax and kind of play along with that kind of thing. And it was he was just, well, blown away is what we keep saying, but it was really something.
You know, I was trying to figure out, you know, if he was a Democrat or Republican, because really we spent some time talking about one issue and then some other questions. And then, you know, I figured out who he was and where he was from and kind of did my homework. And I did follow him as well, just like Dan, seeing where he was going. And then all of a sudden he became such a name when it came to the U.S. Senate. And it all happened for a reason, and he won by a landslide for a lot of things because of that. That election was really one-sided at the time. And then he went on, and I think that convention speech got everybody's attention in the U.S. and put him on the map in terms of he could be a next presidential candidate. And it was just so fun to see that happening while Dan and I had the opportunity, you know, a long time ago to meet him on radio.
Greg Coos from the McLean County Museum of History.
He certainly rose rapidly in Illinois. I know some people who doing business with state senate in Springfield when he was down there as a state senator spoke of his ability to cross the aisle, his ability to listen. So there people were paying attention to him as a state senator. They were surprised that a liberal African-American Democrat would be able to sit down at a poker game with some Republicans. And they found him unusual in that sense, and they found him to be very much of a straight shooter.
Former Bloomington City Council member, labor leader, and community organizer Mike Matika became interested early on in some of the programs State Senator Obama was behind.
Well, I would credit Ron Moorhead, president of our trades and labor here in Bloomington, because Ronnie actually follows vocational education and youth opportunity legislation in Springfield. And Ronnie would always come back and say, I can't say this guy's name, but he's really smart and he really knows what he's doing and he's really trying to get on top of this stuff. you know, here was this young man out here who was a little bit different than maybe particularly other Chicago politicians were, and impressing somebody in our community. When he was a state senator, you know, and if there's any of those ambitions, they were very private, because that was, I think, before he ran for Congress against Bobby Rush, you know, before he ran for the Senate seat. I guess this is something, you know, some of these things you talk about years ago. I had the chance to introduce him three different times at different events. So, and the first time I kind of jokingly introduced him as one of those funny Chicago politicians with an O apostrophe name, which kind of looked at me funny the first time. Then it became a campaign button later on. So I think it was something people played with, and I won't take credit for the idea.
When he began seeking the Democratic nomination for United States Senate, Obama became a more familiar face in McLean County. His appearances started out small, as recollected by member of the Bloomington City Council, Karen Schmidt.
I have to say that the first time I heard about him, I just thought he was a guy with a funny name and a Chicago politician. And people would say, oh, he's terrific. And I'd think, well, I wonder why people are saying that. The McLean County Democrats were really getting behind. I think Dan Hines and Lonnie Smith came to me with a videotape and said, Barack Obama is looking for somebody in McLean County to host a reception for him. And we wondered if you and your husband might be interested in doing this. Go home and have a look at the tape. And so I did, and I was just knocked my socks off. Couldn't believe it. The minute my husband got in the door from work, dragged him, made him sit down. He said, oh, yes, this guy looks like a really good guy. So we went ahead and hosted a reception for him. Probably had 50, 60 people. This is one of those things where, you know, everybody says they were there, but we know we could still walk around our house. So probably we're not all that many people there. It was a wonderful event, very intimate, and he really laid out a lot of issues for us. He spoke very clearly and pretty bluntly about the war, and I think that really resonated with people. He also talked a lot about other issues that were taking a back seat at the time because of the war, education, just economics, and how we deal with the people in our society that are sort of the least amongst us. So that was a real opportunity to get to rub shoulders with somebody who, you know, obviously has just continued to move on ahead.
By opening up her home to the Obama for Senate campaign, Karen opened herself up to more than one interview on the subject.
Yeah, we had Danish TV, the Washington Bureau of Danish TV, got in touch with us. I guess they were trying to do a story on Obama's, the roots of his campaign, and they did a little Googling. Google is an amazing search engine, and they came up with us and came over one night. It was during a blizzard. Maybe 07, I don't know, it might have been in the spring of 07. So the reporter was Danish, and then he had a cameraman with him who was actually probably from somewhere in the Midwest, and came over and talked with Lonnie Smith and my husband and me. And we ended up as a part of a Danish TV news show, which is kind of, it was really kind of sweet because it was all done in Danish except for when we were talking. My favorite story out of that actually was the Danish reporter. I said, you know, where are you staying? Be really careful because the roads were just in terrible shape. And he was out in the west side, and he said, you know, are there any good restaurants out there? And I think we said, well, you know, there is a Steak and Shake out there. And he said, oh, Steak and Shake. Okay, have they got a good wine list?
WJBC talk show host Beth Wissman.
The first time I met Barack Obama, I was not necessarily working in a news capacity. I'd been invited to a private fundraiser to observe how the process works, and that was at the home of Dave Doris. He had become a friend of Jim Williams, and I was very curious, frankly, just to see when the microphones weren't turned on, how these people communicated with each other. And at the time, Barack Obama was running in the primary for the U.S. Senate seat. So he was still a state senator at the time, and he really wasn't someone that we knew a lot about. And, of course, with his name being a little funny, we really just weren't sure who he was. And John Edwards was supposed to be at that fundraiser raising money for the Democrats. At that time, John Kerry was going to be the nominee for the Democrats, but he had to bail, and we just weren't sure what we were going to find when we got there. There were a few people who already had met him and probably were inspired by him, but most of the people didn't really know who he was. I certainly didn't know who he was, except for that he was in the state Senate. But there are a lot of state senators. But he commanded that room. I was impressed. And at the same time, he was asking these people for a lot of money. And people were shaking their head yes and getting their checkbooks out. And I was baffled by it. And I made it very clear that I was not there to help raise money. I was there just to observe as a member of the media. And he didn't care. He just wanted to meet me and said hello to me and shook my hand. And we talked for a couple of minutes just about the direction of where the Democratic Party was going at the time and what his intentions were as a U.S. senator if he were indeed to win the primary. And I just remember thinking, this guy, he knows how to talk, if nothing else. He really got those people's attention. And a lot of people in that room were disappointed that John Edwards had to cancel at the last minute. So for him to have made all of those people feel like that when they were leaving and still give money, that's a true talent.
Illinois State University Chief of Police Ron Swan, recently honored for his work with the local chapter of the NAACP, was also impressed with Obama's gift for gab.
I met President-elect Obama when he was running for the United States Senate, and he visited a branch meeting of the Bloomington Normal branch of the NAACP. He was, as we all know, or at least most people that are observant of communication skills, he certainly is good at communicating. At that time, none of us in that room had any idea, and perhaps the president-elect at that point had no idea that at one point in the not-too-distant future would become the president of the United States.
The intimate nature of those early campaign stops has seemed notable in retrospect, as it was to Frank McSwain Sr., of Mount Pisgah Baptist Church, where Michelle Obama met with the congregation.
But I wish I had known what I know today. I would not only have had a tape recorder, but probably a video camera and roses and food downstairs. She just came to just speak and to just share with the congregation as to what their, the campaign was all about and what they were looking to do. That's pretty much it, just to say who she was and who her husband was. And
another early fundraiser took place just steps from where Abraham Lincoln used to ply his trade as a lawyer, the old courthouse, which now is the McLean County Museum of History. Greg Coos.
His campaign organization hired the Museum of History Hall, our historic courtroom, for a fundraiser. And I had an opportunity to meet with him then. He smoked a cigarette in my office, so I felt, kind of close. Just one of those human things. People who are going to be on stage, they're going to be in front of people, and the impact and the impression they make is very important to them. They need a bit of solitude and silence, and a cigarette can be a very effective way of creating distance. And I would say that that's essentially what he was doing. He was creating a bit of personal space that was necessary before he went on.
But those quiet moments would become fewer and farther between for a man who was about to take a national stage at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Once Barack Obama gained the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat, he began gaining momentum. And perhaps the biggest momentum builder was a keynote address at the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Mike Matika.
When he first came here during the primaries and that, it was, okay, here's another guy running for primary. But after that speech at the Democratic Convention, suddenly, it wasn't just the usual 30 or 40 suspects that showed up. I mean, it was hundreds of people that wanted to take the measure of this man.
Scott Laughlin.
Talking with U.S. Senate candidate Barack Obama. Last time we talked to you, I think, was the eve or maybe the morning of your speech in front of the national audience at the convention. Are you surprised at the reaction that you got after delivering that speech?
There's no doubt that I'm gratified at the warmth of the reception after the speech. But as I explained to some people afterwards, I was just trying to express the eloquence and the strength and good humor and resilience that I hear from voters every day. I was telling their stories. And so the thing that I constantly remind myself and my staff is that no matter how well-received a speech is, that's only a 15-minute speech. And the hard work comes in actually delivering on the promises that are made during a campaign.
Obama frequently found himself weighing in on presidential campaign issues, as heard here with Jim Williams and Beth Wissman.
I think it's unfortunate that somehow we are ending up debating the Vietnam War instead of debating how we can strengthen our economy and get our troops home from Iraq. The other place they wanted to focus was on John Kerry and slanderizing his character. Karl Rove is successful at doing it. They did the same thing to John McCain when they were running against him in a presidential primary in South Carolina. You know, there were a whole bunch of vets, just like these Swift vet folks, who denounced John McCain. Here's a guy who had been a prisoner of war, and they said that somehow he was unpatriotic. And, you know, so this is sort of par for the course. And our job is to not get stuck in that morass, but to focus on the things that are facing people every day.
Once in office, Obama did his best to downplay his status at first.
Senator Barack Obama joins us. Senator, glad to have you back with us.
Great to talk to you guys.
How are things going, as you joke, 99th in seniority?
Well, you know, they're making me sharpen the pencils and sweep the floors. And they gave me a toothbrush the other day to clean the latrines. You know, overall, it's a wonderful experience, obviously, you know, to be able to, you know, deal with some of the most important issues, not only in the country, but internationally, and being able to represent the greatest state in the country is a great honor, and I'm really enjoying it.
Obama's junior position in the Senate didn't seem to matter to the many who crowded around him at an appearance during the Relay for Life event for the American Cancer Society.
And here in Relay for Life 2005 at Normal West, it is Williams and Westman. Good afternoon, everybody. How are you?
Hey, guys.
Hey. Excellent. Is everybody somewhat familiar with this gentleman here? I think so. And just coming directly from Heartland Community College and the town hall meeting here in Normal, Senator Barack Obama, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Jim. Beth, it's great to be here. And I'm just so glad to see so many people supporting this outstanding cause.
During the Relay for Life broadcast, Barack Obama was actually at Heartland Community College for something that he was working on completely separate. And the Democrats that we knew in McLean County who knew that he was going to be there were excited about it. And we told him, look, Heartland Community College is just down the street from Normal West. And literally, when he wraps up speaking, he could just come down the street and there'll be a huge audience there. But he was very interested because, of course, his mother had died of cancer.
Part of the reason that I wanted to stop by, you know, my mother died of cancer at a very early age, at the age of 53. My grandfather died of prostate cancer. And so, you know, I know not only how difficult it is for those who are undergoing treatment, but I also know how tough it is for the families.
The experience was unexpected. When you're in a radio studio, it's just you and the person. There's not an audience sitting in front of you. And when he walked onto the grounds at Relay for Life, people stopped what they were doing. They stopped and stared, and they came around to see who he was. And they had to put him in a golf cart to get him around so that he wouldn't, you know, have to walk everywhere. And when he finally made it up to our broadcast site, there was a trail of people following him that then came around where we were sitting and broadcasting and started watching. And people were asking for autographs. They were right up against him. There really wasn't a sense of security for him. And I don't think there really needed to be at the time.
And all these volunteers are outstanding. And they're so cool, they're barely breaking a sweat. You know, it's about 100 degrees out here, but everybody's keeping their cool, walking around the track. And I am just, you know, really encouraged when you see people volunteering like this, you know, because this is really part of what makes this country great, is people being willing to put in the time on important causes like this.
By the time Barack Obama had come to Relay for Life in McLean County in 2005, we'd seen him a lot, and he always was known for dressing nice. He wore a suit everywhere he went. And we joked on the air and said, you know, it's so hot. It was so hot that summer. There's no way this man is going to walk out in a suit and have all these people, you know, shaking his hand and having no air conditioning. Surely he'd wear a polo, maybe even shorts.
The senator is here in shirt and tie, dignified as always.
We took a bet, Senator, beforehand. Was it going to be a polo or a tie?
I drove by the Bloomington pool with all the that water park over there, and I was about to jump in, but but my staff advised me that wouldn't be dignified, so I decided that I'd come in here in long pants. The other thing is my legs are kind of skinny, so I try not to show them off when it's not necessary.
And, you know, I look back at that story, and actually I realize the tables are turned because he was in a suit, and there I was interviewing a future president wearing a tank top and shorts.
after the devastating hurricanes in the Gulf Coast region in 2005, the fundraising effort of ShareFest took on a special significance. R.C. McBride spoke with Obama after Katrina and Rita while broadcasting live from ShareFest.
Well, I just think it's wonderful what you guys are doing. You know, I just came back from Washington where we're trying to make sure that the federal response is making the lives of folks a little bit easier than they've been over the last several days. But before that, I was in Houston, and in the Astrodome, the city of Houston is housing 25,000 people. You've got another 200 who are displaced just in the Houston area.
Did you ever think that you would see anything like this in the United States of America?
No, I think this is a disaster of unimaginable proportions. I mean, keep in mind that back in 2001, there had been a risk assessment of what would be the three biggest potential tragedies, and New Orleans flooding was one of them. The only thing I think that would be comparable would be, you know, the big earthquake in California. You know, as bad as 9/11 was, most police officers and firefighters didn't see their own homes destroyed. Down in New Orleans, you've got the people who are supposed to be in charge of providing law and order themselves being devastated. And that's why it's so important to make sure that the federal government has plans in catastrophes like this to step up quickly. And so there's going to be time for investigations, and I think that, you know, there are going to be a lot of folks who could have done a better job. All of us are responsible for making sure that this kind of response doesn't happen again.
Illinois State University President Al Bowman.
And then, of course, as our U.S. Senator during my frequent visits to Washington, always look in on Senator Durbin as well as Senator Brock and his staff.
Did he give you the impression that that was where he was headed in the various times that you met him? He always seemed to be...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was clear to me that that he had a vision beyond the U.S. Senate. He's very bright. He obviously has kind of communication skills that people would die for. But I just felt like he was destined for greatness, and clearly that's happened.
By mid-2006, Dr. Bowman wasn't the only person who had that notion, as we discussed with Senator Richard Durbin.
Time magazine is trying to draft our junior senator and put him in the White House. What's that about?
Well, let me tell you, I'm really lucky to have Barack Obama as my colleague in the Senate. He's been a great friend. We've worked on a lot of things for Illinois together, and we're going to continue to. But the speculation continues to grow about whether he might run on the Democratic side for president. I've encouraged him to look at it seriously. Anyone who has attended a meeting with him knows what I'm talking about. The crowds that turn out for Barack Obama are amazing. They're the kind of crowds you expect for a nominee from a major political party for president. And I think it shows the level of interest that people have not only in Barack, but in his message, what he stands for. I think he would bring an interesting element into a presidential race. I think he would energize a lot of people that have been standing on the sidelines for a long time.
We talked to Senator Durbin in the autumn. By one of the coldest days of that Illinois winter, Barack Obama would go to the steps that Abraham Lincoln once stood upon to make a dramatic announcement. Obama began his campaign in February on the steps of the old Capitol building in Springfield. Dara Brockmeyer was there, and former WJBC reporter Jesse Reeves covered the event.
Let me begin by saying thanks to all of you. I know it's a little chilly.
Dara Brockmeyer.
It was very, very cold. That's just the first thing that pops into my mind. I remember part of the problem was we had a lot of our equipment out there, and it was actually freezing up, so we were having problems. We were having to wrap everything in blankets. So if you can imagine if the equipment was freezing, how much we were freezing.
But I'm fired up. It's humbling to see a crowd like this. But in my heart, I know you didn't just come here for me.
There was a lot of media there. I think at that point is when we really realized how popular he was and how much more than just, you know, the United States cared about him.
I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for president of the United States of America.
Well,
it is official after months of speculation and even a joke about his running on Monday Night Football when the Bears played. Senator Barack Obama has now put his hat in the ring to run for the presidency of the United States in 2008. He spoke in front of a crowd of 15 to 17,000 estimated, not to include the 250 media outlets around the world, far away from Italy, Russia, and Canada.
Once the presidential campaign was launched, the question for many was, is it too soon for this rising star to make such a large jump in his political career? State Farm Vice President Willie Brown.
And I thought he could be president, but not in 2008. I thought that maybe his time might be 2012, 2016. I mean, it was obvious that he had lots of talents, but I wasn't one that thought 2008 was his moment in time. I met him twice here in Bloomington at the State Farm corporate headquarters when he came to visit our CEO, Ed Russ, and also others of us who sit on the chairman's council. And I met him with Mike Matika when he was running for senator. So I met him twice, and I knew that he was special. But I thought that he could be president in 2004 when he gave the keynote address and he looked at all of us, looked us in the eye and said, we're not Americans that live in blue states or Americans that live in red states. We are citizens of the United States of America. And I thought right then and there, this is a special individual. As far as when he started running, it was really as the debates went on in the Democratic primary. He got stronger. He got had his message down. And he was talking to us about something that I think we all aspire to. We all want to be better than we are. He was speaking to us about our hopes, not about our failures. And I think it touched a lot of us. It touched me. And I thought, you know, just maybe this guy can be president of the United States. And, of course, then Super Tuesday, when he did so well on Super Tuesday in the primary, kind of let us know that he wasn't going away.
Illinois State University President Al Bowman.
It was kind of interesting. One of the early conversations I had with him about seeking the U.S. presidency was before he had announced. I just happened to have a meeting with him in his office. And I said, well, I don't have any doubt about your ability to be competitive because you won Iroquois County. And he sort of looked at me like, why does that matter? Well, Iroquois County, as you and I know, is a rural agricultural county in east central Illinois. And for him to win that county during the Senate race was pretty remarkable. So when he won the primary in Iowa, it seemed clear to me that it was likely that he'd be able to go all the way.
Willie Brown.
One thing about, President-elect Obama running was he did not spend a lot of time talking about race issues. He presented himself as a citizen of the United States who wanted to be our president. And I think that was the basis that he was elected. He inspired young people, old people, black people, white people, people of all different genders and all different races. And I think that speaks volumes for who we are as a people in America. And I might also say, McLean County, Barack Obama carried McLean County. I found that very interesting.
Greg Coos from the McLean County Museum of History.
To say that it's a pretty Republican area is to really understate it. Essentially, McLean County voted Republican, starting with the first Republican, Abraham Lincoln, and pretty consistently voted Republican, and has been very consistent with that. And so it's a situation that very rarely does a Democrat win here. And some say that demography is changing, and it could be part of it. I think the last Democrat to win was Johnson in 64, and then, you know, Obama gets it. And that was extraordinary. And part of that is going to be the student vote. When students do come out and vote and there's a person like Obama, they'll come out. And I think that's probably what made the difference.
Student volunteer Jason Nippa.
They took countless trips to Iowa. I was there for the caucuses. It was an exciting time. So, yep, there was never any doubt in my mind. Just the amazing array of personal stories that really motivated people to come out. I mean, first-time caucus goers that were, you know, in their 70s and 80s, people had said, you know, I haven't come out and I haven't been involved in a presidential election since JFK. But something about this candidate brought out so many new people and brought in so many people into a process that is, you know, has shunned people away in recent years. The participation of young people is just staggering. It really made this election what it was. And we saw all these students, so quite a few from Illinois that go to college in Iowa, get bused back or drive back just for that caucus because it was during their winter break. You come out, you'll stand out there for hours in the cold because you know you're a part of something special.
Iowa began one of the most expensive and hardest fought presidential campaigns in our history. The primary concluded at the Democratic National Convention in Denver.
We're pleased to be joined from our live coverage at the Democratic National Convention in Denver with Illinois' senior senator, Dick Durbin. How are you today, sir?
I couldn't be better. It's one step removed from 4 years ago when I introduced State Senator Barack Obama from Chicago, Illinois, to the Boston Convention, where he gave a little speech. And I use that term euphemistically because it was more than a little speech. It, as I'll say in my introduction, I think it changed politics in America. I mean, I think back on it, I could not have imagined 4 years ago he would have been elected easily United States Senator and gone on to be the nominee at the next Democratic convention.
The general election would end with another dramatic moment back in Illinois. On election night, all eyes came back to Illinois as Obama prepared to wrap up his campaign, where he began his political career in Chicago.
Our Jim Fitzpatrick is stationed in Grant Park.
A lot of people have come down here. They may have waited since 12:30 this afternoon all the way to, I talked to people who have waited here since 9 this morning. They're not allowed onto the field until actually 8:30 tonight. The city has lit up red, white, and blue lights on top of all the skyscrapers, including the Sears Tower. The windows surrounding me here in downtown USA on one American flag and another building. Thousands of people continue to pour into Grant Park to hear Barack Obama speak later tonight. When I first came here, there were lines throughout Congress Parkway, but those lines are just a steady stream getting into Grant Park. Live in Grant Park in downtown Chicago, Jim Fitzpatrick, 1230 WJPC.
Election night in Chicago, with that setting, with that many people, and being right up there, being able to see that, the culmination of so many millions of people, all their hard work. I have to say that was the pinnacle moment.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
Obama was elucidating what he was bringing out. It was a very, very powerful message, and that is that a sense Obama embodied the promise of Lincoln in terms of what Lincoln was saying, that, you know, the essential notion of human equality, and you give people an opportunity to rise, to be the best they can, no matter who they are, no matter what race they are, that you will meet and create the opportunity for tremendous personal victories. And it's clear that Obama certainly represents that, you know, if he does not even embody it.
It's the answer told by lines that stretched around schools and churches in numbers this nation has never seen. By people who waited 3 hours and 4 hours, many for the first time in their lives, because they believed that this time must be different, that their voices could be that difference.
Now, I look back at the leaders from the 1960s and look at your Malcolm X and your Martin Luther King. What Barack Obama means to the African-American community is the next leader, national and international leader, that we can look to. We haven't had that in quite a number of years in our community, but he is our leader.
It's the answer spoken by young and old, rich and poor, Democrat and Republican, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, gay, straight, disabled, and not disabled. Americans who sent a message to the world that we have never been just a collection of individuals or a collection of red states and blue states. We are and always will be the United States of America.
If it takes all of us to make that rainbow, I have a level of pride, and I'm very excited about him being African-American from a perspective of being African-American myself. But there is another level, Steve. There is a deeper depth. There is a more broader perspective.
It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day.
You know, I've had lots of people ask me over the last month or two, you know, what does his election mean to African Americans? And, you know, a couple things come to mind. One is, you know, besides the historic transformation, but another is it changes the sort of the vision that the world and that America has of an African-American family, because you have an intact family, two highly educated parents and successful kids. The visual image of the Obama family, I think, will remind Americans that the civil rights legislation of the 60s has enabled millions of African-American families to achieve the middle-class dream. Millions.
It's been a long time coming. But tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America. While we breathe, we hope. And where we are met with cynicism and doubt, and those who tell us that we can't, we will respond with that timeless creed that sums up the spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
I think it gives people hope all over the world that, yes, conditions can change, people can be more open, people can be more accepting of each other as human beings with something to give and to share. So I think that is certainly out there. I think the real challenge is going to be the level of expectation.
We as Americans, we are can-do people. We believe that we can get it done, and I think, again, he brings that type of yes, we can, if you will, get it done. We've done it before. We've got a lot of challenges, a lot of issues we have to face. Maybe in these, maybe you live in interesting times, the phrase, and of course my boss, Ed Russ, uses that all the time. Maybe the fact that we are in very interesting times, we'll have so little time to think about the color of Barack Obama's skin, because he'll be dealing with tremendous issues that will impact us as individuals, our families, our children and our grandchildren, the communities we live in. And if he and his cabinet, if they do it well, we'll look back and we'll be able to say with pride the job that he did as President of the United States.
The voices of Illinois State student Jason Nippa, Greg Coos from the McLean County Museum of History, NAACP Bloomington Normal President Mike Williams, Pastor Frank McSwain, Illinois State University President Al Bowman, Labor Leader Mike Matika, State Farm Vice President Willie Brown, and Barack Obama. I'm Steve Fast. Thanks for listening.
History Through Our Eyes, The Election of Barack Obama, was produced and written by Steve Fast, co-produced by Dara Brockmeyer, and was drawn from the archives of WJBC. Thanks go out to the members of the WJBC News Team, past and present, to capture history as it happens. This has been a production of WJBC, the voice of McLean County.